Episode, that's right, ripple of applause. First episode of brand new podcast, The Mouth of Sauron, which ultimately is going to become a companion piece for the new Amazon show, Rings of Power. But I think up until then, what we're going to be doing is anticipating a lot of stuff that's going to come out and discussing things and, predicting things and that kind of stuff. Not a lot to react to at the moment. But look, let's start by saying who we are. I'm Cal. Love Lord of the Rings. I'll go into like a little bit more detail around that. You are?
I'm Ash, and yeah, big fan of Lord of the Rings. Really excited for the show and everything, you know, the discussions around it, I think are going to be pretty wonderful.
Yeah. I'm Mike. I hate Lord of the Rings. No, I love Lord of the Rings. Watched it first time I was about 12, and been obsessed. I watch about three times a year. So
yeah, how many times do we think we've all watched the trilogy all the way through?
About three times over.
Right.
So since it's come out.
Yeah. From the age of 12 to now.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So that's like 60 times you've seen the entire trilogy.
Yeah, probably. I just watch it as a background piece, really.
Yeah.
But I assume you also watch other things to do with it as well.
Yes.
So like it'd be good to get an hour.
Everything but The Hobbit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sweet.
I'm Jimmy, the producer. You can't see me. And we've got Deej here as well, who will be stepping in and swapping out with people you can see right now. Say hello, Deej.
Hello, everyone. I'm sat next to Jimmy behind the camera today. Yeah, but can't wait to get in front.
Vital role behind the camera.
Our fact checkers, yeah. Helping us with everything we need, bringing up maps and few facts if we need it, but you know we've got some supplies around us, which can help us out. You probably notice the Lord of the Rings trilogy just above us on the bookshelf.
Book tankards, eh?
Yeah, of course. Not very
last time you saw a tankard on a podcast,
not Lord of the Rings related one, so Deej.
Yeah,
pull your finger up, dude.
Yeah, so look, let's get into it. I think what we're going to look at today is firstly what we kind of know already on the sort of limited little bit that's been put out there by Amazon or other kind of outlets, media outlets. And then also, second thing is what we kind of want from it all, like what we're genuinely excited about to see here. I think let's get into it. Like what we know so far, we've got two main things to go off of. Obviously, the teaser trailer, which is like a minute. Is it 1 minute long?
I think it's about 1 minute, yeah. They cram a lot in.
They do. To be fair, I mean, like, in terms of actual, like, visual, it's less, isn't it? Because there's a lot of, like, just, like, words that come up and, like, transitions. So it's probably, like,
well, I thought it was
40 seconds of actual, like, there's some...
Well, I was remembering the teaser trailer come out when it was just, the fire thing. I was trying to read into that.
Yeah.
And I don't know what I expected to find.
Well, that was just molten metal being forged into.
I thought it was a landscape at first. I actually thought it was like fire running through a landscape. And then everyone online was like, no, it's wood. And I was like, oh yeah, of course that's wood. Well, I was reading so far into it.
So there's that. And obviously that's, just on YouTube. There's been a lot of reaction to that as well, like on other YouTube videos. And then the second thing is, I don't know about you guys, but where I've got most of my, like, you know, kind of knowledge based on this so far from is the Vanity Fair article, which we've all read.
I haven't read that, no. I didn't read it. Well, no, because I've been just watching YouTube videos of, like, trailer breakdowns, all that. I've been watching it about 100 times myself as well.
I think it's impossible to, if you've looked into it at all, to have basically not read it through a secondary source.
Yeah, I've read
articles on it. It's all that anybody's got to go off, right?
It's kind of rare for me though, because like just anything normally that I get into, I tend to try and stay away. I just like to like just watch it and just you know, whatever. But I don't know, with Lord of the Rings, it just hits me different. Like, no, I need
stuff.
Yeah,
that's like me.
Yeah, so, it would be like, you know, with Game of Thrones, if you had read ahead and knew absolutely everything before it happened, right? You know,
there was then people that done that up to a certain point.
Yeah, but
I hated every single one.
But I think the difference there is you can read the books and sort of know it, but like, oh, this are the possibilities. Mm-hmm. I think with Lord of the Rings, like, one of my problems with, not my problems, one of the things that I'm sort of worried about, I'm like, well, hang on, like, I know so much about the second age and everything that's contained within it, and I'm just sort of sitting there thinking, well, there will be no surprises in this entire thing, so I won't have any moment of,
oh, that's, yeah, oh, well, they've added new characters.
That was then, Sauron, was it? Oh,
like, but are they new characters they've added, are they going to, in turn, butcher the ones we know?
Well, look, in terms of what to expect, like, I've got a little extract from the Vanity Fair article, which I think is, if I just read, credit Vanity Fair, obviously, and then, I'd quite like to know what you guys think about this.
Yeah,
sure.
So this is literally verbatim from the article. It says, the first three episodes, which Vanity Fair has seen...
Ooh. That's a good look.
Yeah. The show is a lavish, compelling mix of palace intrigue, magic, warfare, and mythology. And there are enough mysteries to power 1,000 podcasts. Obviously, you know, just stick with this one. Some characters will be familiar.
Is that what it says?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Shit.
Yeah. Oh my god.
Thought I was the only one. Some characters will be familiar, and they will be the initial attraction as viewers watch their legendary fates unfurl. But the entirely new faces may ultimately become even more involving, since their destinies are literally unwritten. That's from Vanity Fair, which I think is like, I don't know, it's quite a nice little bit of build-up, I think. Like, from my point of view, I think, yeah, they're spot on. Like, I do, initially, I'm like, oh, great, so we're going to see, you know, the likes of Elrond, the likes of Galadriel, who we know is going to feature heavily. Certain other, like dwarfs, Durin the Fourth, I think, is like a big pull. But then we're also aware of the fact that they're, just going to create some entirely new characters.
The thing is, I think they have to.
Yep.
But is it entirely necessary to go that far with it? It depends how far they take it, really.
Well, I think, look, the elephant in the room
it's about gonna be this podcast. Olyphants. The olyphant in the room.
Olyphant in the room is that if you're talking, they say it's set in the Second Age, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And within that, so much happens. And I think what obviously ends the Second Age is the war, the last alliance between men and elves. Ooh, right?
Spoilers, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, this is going to be non-stop. Yeah. War. So, I mean, I took a note of this actually, because that ends in 3441. Right, that's when essentially when the Second Age ends.
Yep.
But that means if it was going to go from the beginning of the Second Age, sort of when like Numenor is founded and everything, that's, they can't cover 3,500 years of history without, and there's so many characters within that. They have to create characters that are going to combine them.
As I just thought this now, there's going to be dueling storylines of Galadriel's kind of storyline, her kind of way, and then they're going to have a separate, more modern day one with Numenor. Because I don't think they kind of mix. Because it would be a good...
It's interesting, yeah.
It could be after the first age, after Melkor is gone. Yeah. It could be Galadriel's, the fallout from that, and Galadriel going, all right, well, there's still someone like Sauron. So
well, look,
we're going to Sauron's modern day kind of...
That's, so. I think that might happen, yeah. But again, going back to the Vanity Fair article, it says that... And this is interesting, so... Do we all know like the source material they've actually acquired the rights to?
Yes.
The appendices is from
Return of the King. So I think it was, what it says is in 2017, the Tolkien estate, which I think at that point was Christopher Tolkien. He's not dead, is he?
He is dead. He's dead.
Okay.
So they've got the grandson who's a bit of like a playboy kind of guy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think his name's like...
Because I think, from what I know, I think Christopher Tolkien... No. Rolf.
Rolf Tolkien.
Rolf Tolkien.
No, it's not. It's something like that, though. I'm pretty sure.
Wait, I quite like
can
to
can we fact-check that?
A Tolkien playboy.
No, I don't know. It's
he
a,
is.
They actually, cool. They actually had a... he's like a Tolkien scholar, I think they call him. And they reference that in the article quite a lot, don't they? So,
yeah.
Well, they've got people on board.
It says, in 2017, the Tolkien estate held a surprising auction. So basically, like... No one ever thought they were going to sell any rights to nothing.
Yeah, no.
And then they basically were like, okay, let's just auction off these rights. Which is a funny way to do it. Like,
sorry. Even after the Lord of the Rings, the original franchise, they didn't think they would sell it. They didn't think they'd sell anything.
I think so.
Well, there is The Hobbit.
Tolkien sold the rights to
New line and
no, I think it was sold before that, and they brought it off someone else.
Oh, good. Well, I suppose it was the original. Because
Disney wanted to buy it, didn't they? Originally, and he told them to do one.
So it says they were selling the rights to the appendices.
Mm.
That's all they have the rights to.
Yeah.
The appendices of the, which is the section at the end of.
Because I don't think they're allowed to really reference too much of the First Age.
Unfinished tales, like letters to Tolkien, which we've discussed before, which is basically fans just like. Mm. And sending him a letter like, hey, what would happen if such and such a thing?
Because they've got so much. He's like,
never even thought about it, I suppose, here. So, like, it's a bit mental. Like, what they have to do is they have to construct a Second Age story based on any time it's referenced in The Hobbit, or referenced in The Two Towers.
I think in the Q&A that they did with the showrunners, they actually said, somebody brought that up and said, well, you know, what have you got? And they said, well, no, the Tolkien Estate have also said that they will license us for anybody that is essentially important to the storyline.
Mm.
So you can obviously use Galadriel, and you can use Elrond, you can use all these characters that are in the other ones. And if there is anybody that you're like, look, we need to use, you know, these other characters, as they will say.
That's
what
it says. So in 2017, the Tolkien Estate held a surprising auction. They were selling the rights to the appendices that outlined the Second Age of Middle-earth, along with any reference to that time period in The Lord of the Rings itself.
Mm.
So if there's any reference to anything in The Lord of the Rings, they can go, great, like, let's just have that, and we'll just take that and make it not a word, let's make it an episode.
Yep.
Which is pretty amazing, actually.
Kind of what they've done with a lot of The Hobbit.
Yeah,
basically.
Did they?
The White Council, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Do we have a cost there, Cal? A price? How much cheddar?
Wasn't it like $450 million or something?
They're saying that he's...
Oh no, is that the budget they've got?
Well, the budget,
how much they brought the rights for.
How much they bought the rights.
Oh, it's a bit of a crash down there.
Ignore that.
I don't know how much they bought the rights for. I'm guessing that's a part of the... Yeah. The overall spend of how expensive the series is, though.
I know they've been pretty, like, tight-lipped about just, like, what the total spend is and stuff. But it's widely acknowledged in terms of, like, production costs. It's going to be, like, the most expensive thing ever. Going back to where we just originally started to talk about this, it says, Amazon show is based not on a Tolkien novel per se, but on the vast backstory he laid out in the appendices of The Lord of the Rings.
Mm.
In the novels, things take place over thousands of years. But Payne and McKay, the showrunners, have compressed events into a single point in time. Which is like, I don't know, I think from what I've seen out online, that's causing quite a lot of, like, hardcore fan concern. They're like, how can you possibly do that? Like,
I don't think you can do it. Like, obviously you can, because they've made the show, right? But I also don't think you can make a show that spans thousands of years. And I think you just have to get over that. My only fear is whether or not they're going to, and I think this is why they're going to be so restricted with the rights, is my only fear is if they start really messing with the lore. So there's something that I just have to talk about that. I'm like, if that's in it, that is stupid. And that's the, there's breakdowns of the trailers going on and some of the posters. And one of the posters is like an old man's hands.
Mm. And are you fearing that's a wizard?
Yeah, and they're saying, is that a wizard? And if it's a wizard, it's like, well, that's breaking the rules too much.
The blue wizards did come over in the Second Age, so there could be wizards in it.
To be fair,
no one knows if it is a blue wizard, they went into the east, so when they arrived, and they arrived in the Second Age. So.
Isn't there a link to the Meteor Man with the hands? A lot of people are trying to make
that
link.
If that's Sauron, I'm going to go mad. Meteor Man.
What's the Meteor Man? Can you explain that for a noob like me?
Well, in the trailer, I think it's Gil-galad comes out and looks up in the sky. Well, it looks, that's what they kind of perceive it as, and sees an asteroid flying above the head. And then in another scene, at the end of... Meteorite?
It's a meteorite once it hits.
How did you know?
Earth. Well, then, alright, so then a meteorite is on Earth, and there's a man in it, like, glowing red. And then some people, I think it might even be dwarves are looking at him, maybe.
No, I think so the bit that I've read online, that is, because another big deal is, will there be hobbits? Mm. This is the thing that they've got to like sort of weigh up. Like if they want to attract in new, or not even like just new viewers, but like casual viewers who just know something about Lord of the Rings. What's the first thing that comes to your mind when you think Lord of the Rings?
Hobbits.
Hobbits.
Yeah.
So, like, are they going to create a world with no hobbits? No. So I think what they've got is these Harfoots, which is Harefoots, which is the ancestors of hobbits. Because hobbits really, like, evolved, basically, in third age. So the Harfoots will be second age. And there's a couple Harfoots that you see in the trailer, and apparently... Yeah, meet your man lands, like you said, fiery dude.
And they find him.
And the, one of the Harfoots is like...
Yeah, well, they the first existed,
to get
so
this crater of meteor.
Creating a mount, no, a mortal in terms
but there's a,
of...
But there's a big, like, there's a big, oh, who is this meteor man guy? And I think that's going to be, like, a big part of the season. Who is he? Where's he come from? What is he? You know?
Yeah, that's...
Almost that, like...
Do they need that, though? With everything going on in Numenor, like, the whole... fall of it and destruction of it. Sorry, well, that's a spoiler, but that's a great series in itself, just to base it on there. Don't even need, like...
That's the whole deal. Like, is there enough out there, but they haven't got the rights to just tell that story?
Mm.
They have to embellish bits and be able to thread bits together on, like...
Well that's it. Like, if it doesn't end with the... I know that there's no way we can do this without really just telling the biggest spoilers ever, but if the series, or at some point in the series, if Numenor is destroyed...
Don't.
Then... Well, that's you have to.
Wait, Ashley doesn't know more spoilers than anyone else. Well,
I'm just saying, like, if you don't know, well, look, this is for diehard fans, all right?
Yeah.
But if Numenor isn't destroyed at some point, then I don't know what story they're going to tell.
No, well, that's it.
Because it's not going to be any of the big battles. They're going to have to make up everything.
Go back to the article. Look. This is McKay and Payne speaking. Look, there might be some fans who want us to do a documentary of Middle Earth. Like, literally, like, just...
Well, no one does. Well, it
would
be good.
We're going to tell them. I'm glad to see that.
People aren't going to watch it.
That's our next venture.
Next
You should keep that one quiet.
Louis Theroux, like, Middle Earth. But we're going to tell one story that unites all things. So we talked with the Tolkien estate, says Payne. If you're true to the exact letter of the law, you're going to be telling a story in which your human characters are dying off every season. Because you're jumping 200 years in time, and then you're not being really big, important canon characters until like season 4. The driving question, see, this is the bit that really like made me go, I'm scared. The driving question behind the production, he adds, was this. Can we come up with the novel Tolkien never wrote and do it as the mega event series that could only happen now? Like, that's risky to be like,
even
oh.
Even saying that to
Who
the hell do you think you are?
Yeah, and really, that I think that they're saying, well, yeah, because only they're sort of jumping between the big events in the Second Age.
I mean, I like
but it. They, it, but it, you, in the only 20 years passes through the trilogy, the original trilogy.
Does it?
Yeah, it's like 20 years. Yeah.
And well,
fact check, please. Fact check. Dude.
Well, no, because 17 years goes by between before Gandalf comes back to the Shire.
Really?
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
So
yeah, so it's 20
they,
years.
They
from,
left that going like just 17 years of pottering around in the Shire. Going.
Wait, sorry, Mike. Do you mean between the Hobbit and the?
No, Fellowship? I'm talking about in the actual book of Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
So when Gandalf discovers the ring and says, "Keep it secret, keep it safe," kind of thing.
Right.
He goes off and fucks off
for 17 years.
Yeah.
I thought it's 20 years from his 111th birthday.
So I've got.
Go on.
Google has given me an answer that says, so the whole book covers 20 years.
Can we
mention 1 month?
Google and Amazon together, is that allowed? Are we going to upset some people?
However, the main action of the story begins with the ring bearer stepping out of his front door on the 23rd of September 2018. And ends at the same door. Ends at the same door with the very last. End of the war on the 3rd of November 2019.
A year.
So the journey takes 1 year and 14 days.
No.
Yeah, so that means that Gandalf likes.
That's not.
No, I'm not having that, did
you? It is. The actual story, right, from when Frodo has to leave.
You just said Gandalf
fucks
off for 17 years.
Yeah, I mean, from Bilbo's party towards until Frodo leaves the Shire is 17 years.
So there's 17 years.
That makes sense.
So when he goes.
That makes sense.
Keep it secret.
And then
it's a secret.
Yeah, and then pops back up about
Gandalf impression. Quick aside, Gandalf impression. Just a little competition. All right, really gather yourself, and we'll just we all have to say the same line. Keep it secret. Right. Keep it safe.
Okay.
Okay. Right.
I'm
Mike,
gonna stumble
Mike,
my
Mike's going first.
You're not allowed to say Run, you fools!
Fly, you fools!
Fly, you fools!
Shut up! Instant disqualification for the production manager who gets the fucking words wrong.
Yeah, of the most famous line in the entire thing. One of the most powerful moments.
You shall pass.
It's a learning.
You shall pass. It's a learning opportunity. It's a learning opportunity. Yeah, it's a learning curve for all of us. All right.
All right. Okay.
All right. I'm closing my eyes. Mm. I want to imagine you. He's sat next to me.
Keep it secret. Keep it safe.
No, that's rubbish. That's all like Yoda.
Keep it secret.
Oh, I've ruined it. I can't go for a second one.
It's a secret.
Move on.
It's safe.
Nice. There's more of a at the
breathiness.
End there. Yeah.
Watch your mic levels, boys.
Sorry.
Okay. Sorry. Go on then.
Is it secret? Is it safe?
Good. The winner. The clear winner.
Yeah.
I think.
But the, yeah. It wasn't this line we was going for, but it was a great voice. Yeah.
Can I give it a?
Right field.
Graham. Let's do it.
Is it secret? Is it safe?
No, you're like.
Are we going? Is it secret? Like, is it safe? We'll keep it secret. General keep Akbar. It safe.
For everyone that can't see, which is everyone apart from you, us four.
Yep.
Deej just looked like he was having some. He had some sort of aneurysm. He looked like he was walking. I feel like Gandalf was a lot more in the bottom jaw.
Yeah, I could normally do.
Than it is upper.
Yeah, I could have done that.
He's like a court judge.
But I found
just
that.
Just object. Okay. So look, and then also in a larger sense, this is quite important. Patrick McKay says it is the story, as the title suggests, is the story of the creation of all those powers, men, elves, and dwarves, and the rings that they are given.
It's
where
the
they
creation,
came from.
Sorry, what? It's the story of the creation of elves. So that's first age.
It's the creation of all the powers that they got by getting these rings.
Oh, I see. Okay, yeah.
Where they came from and what they did to each of those races. So, like, my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm sort of looking at you here, I think, mainly Mike. Like, sorry.
Well, actually seems to know everything now. Yeah. He's really researched.
So they give three elves get rings and they sort of don't really corrupt them at all. In fact, they're actually quite, like, make them quite good.
They don't.
Seven dwarfs get rings and they sort of corrupt them a little bit, but not really. They don't come under the power of Sauron necessarily. And then nine men get rings and they're like, oh, we are definitely now his bitches.
So, yes.
Because I think, like, skipping ahead a bit here, but in terms of, like, what I want to see, I'd love to see, like, all those nine kings that become ringwraiths.
Well, no one knows. They're kind of a mystery. No one actually knows
we don't
who
know,
they
do we?
Are.
Well, we know four of them.
We think they're Numenorians, but we don't actually know.
And they know one for definite, whose name is Carmel, the Easterling.
Yeah.
And he is... from the Witch King's right, basically like lieutenant, like you're my guy. And then they said that there's three lords of Numenor, but the rest, and I think that's really exciting, and that's something I'm looking forward to seeing. Like,
they'll have to embellish that, they have to show that. And if Numenor's in it, the East is going to be in it, they're going to have to show all these different kingdoms. And I agree with them embellishing that because they need to.
Yeah, I like that.
And that's what I'm saying earlier about, you know, that's why they have to take a much shorter timeline, because if they don't, like, the ringwraiths don't appear until right at the end of the Second Age, and that would be rubbish, because it'd be like, oh, he corrupted those blokes and then we didn't see him for 2,000 years and then they came back.
So my
ring of a really rubbish show.
My understanding, going back to the rings thing, is that so there's Celebrimbor. He and Sauron got together and Sauron kind of taught him how to craft rings. So they created these 16 rings together.
Good maths.
Give it to the dwarves and give it to men. And then Celebrimbor made three more for the elves. They wore them and felt the corruption of Sauron. So they removed them and took them off and hid them. And that drove Sauron mad. And that's why he went to war with them and destroyed them all, and wanted to because he wanted to gather all the rings to himself, but he could never find these rings because the elves never wore them. Because as soon as they put them on, they felt his presence and felt what he was trying to do.
Yeah.
So that's why
there were no mugs.
There were no mugs. So I think they only started really. What I can guess is when the ring When he was destroyed, they put the rings on.
He definitely didn't have a hand in making their three rings. But no. With the techniques that they taught him, I think they do wear them because you see Galadriel wearing them in the Hobbit.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think they started wearing the rings and using them as power because when Sauron was destroyed, and then I think that's when they started creating their little havens of elven kingdoms like Rivendell.
Yeah. Okay, that's Lothlorien. But look, so we all agree that it's pretty obvious if the name of the show is the Rings of Power, and the guys that are creating it are saying it's going to be about those rings and what they do to all the people that end up getting one.
Well, I think
I like that. I rate that as just a.
I've got a few notes on the rings, and it makes for quite an interesting chat. Good. And it seems like a good moment to bring it. Well, so I claim. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be the judge of that, mate.
Well, fine.
I wonder what my favourite ring's going to be.
Now, look, I think the three rings, the only person we don't know is Gil-galad, right? Because we don't know that person yet, right? We'd like that he's going to be in. He's a massive...
He's a massive character.
Yeah, and then he ends up giving his ring to Elrond, right?
Yeah.
And all of the story of the rings, actually, if they've just focused on that, that sets out a really nice storyline. They say the seven rings of the dwarves go to Durin's Folk, Firebeards, the Broadbeams, the Iron Fist, the Stiffbeards, the Blackbox, the Stonefoots, right?
Makes perfect sense. There's seven dwarven clans and seven dwarven rings.
But the only one that is disputed is that the Durin's Folk claim that Durin actually received his ring from Celebrimbor himself. And I think that's quite cool, because then that's why I think they're putting emphasis on Durin being in it. There's all this dispute around whether or not they've gone for the right Durin lore, and you know, we don't really know much about the dwarves from the previous films, but this opens up a nice discussion, I think, because it's like, well, do we care about paying too much attention to what was written about the dwarves before, or do they have complete license now just to go and say, well, yeah, we'll make up about the dwarves now and not pay attention to the things that we know before, right? So like that one ring going there, that could basically be the storyline of the entire dwarves, and then we just don't know about the rest.
Yeah.
Okay, I can stomach that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing is, is there time enough in the series to go around seven dwarf kingdoms and seven kings?
How many different?
That's too overload, I think.
Yeah, how everybody gets like a 3 minutes. And see, come back next week for that.
Ah, we'll have my ring.
Yeah.
Bye then.
Yeah, I think also like how many different ways can you see a dwarf get a ring and then be corrupted by it?
I'm not sure they've ever been. They're not corrupted. They're not missing. They just delve down into the mountains.
It makes them greedy, basically. Right, that's the power, and he doesn't know that.
It's a form of corruption.
And also they're not recovered. I think only three rings or three dwarven rings are actually ever recovered in the lore. And the rest are like eaten by dragons and stuff.
Eaten by dragons.
Yeah, because it just got is in their hordes. So it's got taken by
eaten.
Well, I'm not sure. Like a sit down
eaten by dragons. Yeah,
sitting down meal will. But I think it'd probably be. I think they just yammed it with the rest of the gold.
So we've got Numenor. Mm-hmm. Now I don't know the Elvish translation of Numenor, but I do know that it's a big deal that it looks like a star with its 5 points. And there's basically a city at the tip of each star. Forestar, Andustar, Orostar, Hyaranustar? And then, Hyarnastar and Hyarastar. Yeah.
And Ariastar.
And Ariastar. The star. Yeah. So, I don't know. We do, like, the opening shot, correct me if I'm wrong, of the teaser trailer is... Maybe not the opening shot, but like away is a city.
I didn't think that was. Everyone says it is Numenor, but I didn't think it was. I thought it was like.
Well, Numenor, that's the thing. Numenor is the island, and then you've got these five cities that are at the tip of each point of the island. So, like.
I thought that was like the shores from the Undying Lands. That's where my mind went to when I first saw it, but I could be completely wrong.
Well, nobody. Yeah, well.
But when I saw it, I was like, oh, wow, we're actually going over to, like, there.
But you know what I mean? But to go back to like maybe it may be that each presumably each of those five places has a high up man, and they might be five guys that get rings of the nine, and then I think there's some like Easterling men on there that already on Middle Earth, the Middle Earth continent.
Yeah, you had the two breakaway factions from Numenor, didn't you? The king's men and and essentially they're loyal to.
So I have the translation.
Go for it.
Westerness, Wester, and then Ness, Nesse, is the translation for Numenor.
Oh, into
which does West, make a lot of sense.
West,
Westerness.
That does make sense. Yeah, it's west of Middle Earth.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks, Deej.
But that's. I think going back to what you're saying about whether or not we're in Valinor, whether or not we're in the the Elven lands.
Yep.
I think. Well, if you know the story of Numenor, eventually, you have to go there.
Yeah.
Because that's what.
And if Gladriel's making a journey somewhere, which we think she is with that ice. And do you think they've thrown that, her climbing that icy wall, just to try and entice Game of Thrones fans?
What do you think Game of Thrones fans are like well into icy walls?
Like, they like walls and ice.
Does it have any ice walls in it?
There's an elf climbing one here, mate.
The reason I stuck with that series was to watch anytime that giant ice wall came.
Yeah,
such an impressive feat of engineering.
So, like, objective sexuals.
Well, no, but it's just that kind of thing of like.
There's a lot to be said about an icy wall. You could carve any sort of hole into it, pre-lubed.
Yeah, I know, but shrinkage, man. Shrinkage.
Should we discuss Galadriel?
Yes.
This is Vanity Fair article again. By episode 2, Galadriel's warnings set her adrift. I think by warnings they mean like she's sensing some evil.
Mm-hmm.
Literally and figuratively. Until she's struggling for survival on a raft in the storm-swept, sundering seas alongside a mortal castaway named Halbrand, played by Charlie Vickers.
That's going to be a love story, isn't it?
Ooh.
Well, because Gladriel is married.
He's married,
yes. And I think, in this time, she has a kid as well. So
yeah, who's married to Elrond.
Eventually, yeah. But it's really normal for, because they live forever, elves to go like, all right, husband, I'll see you in like 300 years. But what's 300 years in infinite life?
Nip to the shop. Nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, again, I'd like both your reactions to this. As the series begins, Galadriel is hunting down the last remnants of Morgoth's collaborators who claimed the life of her brother. So her mission is to eradicate any trace of the evil that cost so many lives, including that of her brother, Finrod.
Yeah, he got really badly kind of
brutalized. Did he? Okay.
Yeah.
Like, strung up as like a banner of...
Yeah. Now, interestingly, it says...
Killer Brimborn. They wear him as a banner on the battlefield.
Oh, right, yeah. That is so... I want to see that, though. That's going to be great.
Yeah, well, that'll do the level of brutality that I'm not sure.
When we first see her in the teaser, she's climbing an icy cliff in what is clearly...
God, did you just say icy?
You got a Game of Thrones fan,
didn't you? Sure did. Which is clearly the Forward Waith, a.k.a. the Northern Waste, leading an expedition to track down and destroy any remnants of Morgoth or Sauron who went into hiding after the fall of his master.
That annoys me, I think.
Forward Waith is here, so she's like climbing these massive mountains, because I think, first age, Morgoth's like...
The Witch King Morgoth's... and Angmar, he sets up his thing there, but that's later. Like that's way later.
Yeah, because he's been created.
There are some Game of Thrones overtones, I suppose, isn't it? Because evil people in the Northern Waste, to climb over a wall to get there.
I don't think it's a wall. I think it's called the Grinding. If I'm right, it's called the Grinding.
Well, it's mountains,
sea.
Isn't it? It's icy.
I think it's just horrible. Icy wasteland.
Yeah. Well, it was.
Sorry, no icy wall.
It connects to Elanor, doesn't it? It goes, and it's the only way. And Galadriel had to get there because they ran out of ships, basically. And
okay,
that was the only way that she. Could
look, forget like the ins and outs of it. Are we excited to see Galadriel?
Yes,
very much so. I think.
One detail I really like is the dagger that is being held in that part of the trailer, which it looks like it's made up. If you look at a poster, it looks like it's made up of the two trees.
Yeah.
Or at least symbolises the two trees.
So that leads you to believe that we're going to see them, and that means we're going so far ahead. We're going beyond the. We're going to the years of trees here. That's beyond the first age.
Well, it depends which trees it is, doesn't it? Because
it's going to only be two, mate.
well, aren't they saying? Well, from what I've seen, it could be the white trees, or it could be the in her kingdom that she sets up. She's got like these golden trees. Mm. So, who knows where that could be going?
Well, it's all kind of
just a quick note on the casting of Galadriel. Has anyone seen the actress?
Yeah, she's some blonde Welsh lady.
I'm looking at her now on Google. Pardon she's me. Got the most impossible name ever.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
Most impossible name ever.
Give it a go, Jim.
As Gandalf.
Morfinn.
That's her Morfinn? Actual human being name. In the world.
You say this name. Morfydd.
Moyfred.
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 Moyfred Clark is her name.
Clark. Oh, that's it.
Yeah.
Clark. What? Clark?
Clarky. Miss Clark. Miss Clark will perform the role of Galadriel. I don't know. Am I excited? Yeah. Yeah, I guess so.
I didn't seem it, to be fair.
No.
Well, I'll tell you
I don't know. I don't know enough about her backstory, but like to hear that she's like the leader of a northern army is like, okay, that's quite cool.
Mm.
And there's clearly going to be like some hench battles and stuff, and she's like seeking out the last remnants of evil.
Which is, do we think that she's on the hunt for Sauron?
I think that's fine, but that isn't what she did. Like, that's really not what she did.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she did not go hunting down Sauron. I think, in fact, she wasn't really involved in those wars.
I think
her husband definitely was.
Mm.
Like he was like.
Oh yeah, I don't know enough about it to comment on it.
Curdan? Serdan?
Yeah.
Serdan. I thought Serdan was a shipwright, wasn't he? No.
No, that's Celeborn. What's his name?
Celeborn.
Because he had one of the rings as well. So.
Yeah. Okay.
He's got to be in it, hasn't he?
Fine.
Yeah, he's got to be in it. Yeah. He's like, well, he runs a place that other shop could have been, which is what's it called? Mythland, which is the Grey Havens, the port city.
Yeah.
So
that's a cool character. I think he actually eventually gives his ring to Gandalf when he comes over.
Nice.
Is it?
Right? Yeah, I've got that.
Yeah, and then what does Gandalf do with it?
Wears it very dashingly.
I think.
Builds the power of.
Yeah, he does. Curdan does give it to him. Yeah.
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 So the Grey Havens are where Bilbo and Frodo leave at the end of Return of the King to go
Curdan's story is really cool. Yeah. Basically, he is the shipwright, and then he knows that he has to basically be like the last elf to leave.
Mm.
So his entire story arc of thousands of years is basically just waiting at this port like, anybody else want to bloody go to the Undying Lands?
Wow. Yeah, because that means, at the end, Gimli and Legolas have to build their own boat to go there because he's fucked off. I ain't waiting for you guys. No way. What are you waiting for, that fucking Sam? How long do you want to live?
Oh, man. I think. But also that the Grey Havens are not just a place where people leave. Like ships, Numenorean ships arrive there as well.
Mm.
Something that's like.
Well, I think they actually come in around about.
Ooh.
Here.
Do they, Mike?
I think so, and then start the
fact check.
Well,
where do the Numenoreans originally land?
No, I think they're about here.
Yeah, but that's the thing we're saying about the timeline. Like, they land in loads of different places. Like, they don't have a settlement on it until right near the end of the Second Age, which is...
Yeah, so they're going to need to...
But you're going to have...
What you're saying is what they're going to do with the series is cram all of those landings into the one series.
I think they...
So it's going to look like they're getting about, where in actual fact they, like, slowly crept and...
Over thousands of years. We've
got the corruption of Numenor, and then we have... Sildor an Arion, I think his name is.
Big character, man. Isildur.
And he's there. That's because they see the corruption coming, so get off Sharpish. They come, then they come to Middle-earth and create Gondor and...
Yeah, Elendil is Isildur's dad.
Yeah.
And they're the only two... And they've, and I think there's another brother, there's a brother. I can't remember his name. But they're the only ones that survive.
All right.
So, the Numenoreans land in Umbar.
Umbar.
Which is Umbar. Umbar.
Hansen.
They eventually become the Black Numenoreans, don't they?
Black there's two factions. What are the two factions called? You just can't remember the two. There's two factions.
Hmm.
Yeah, they eventually they become that, and I think they become all men again because they mix with them.
But yeah, I think we're getting into the story now. If we're just going to spoil it for people,
maybe.
That don't know.
Should we talk Elrond?
Let's talk Elrond and his short hair.
Ooh, hey? Haircut. Ooh. Haircut beef.
Okay.
All right. So we're going to get back to it. We're going to discuss Elrond, who I'm very excited about. But even more exciting is the fact that we are going to a recurring segment, and we're going to call it...
Oh, well.
Looks like meat's back,
back on the menu, boys.
We
should do it in, sorry.
Smashed it, synchronicity.
You've got a better voice.
Looks like meat's back on the menu, boys.
Good. Your favourite line.
Yeah, kind of... hate that line. I'm going to hand over to Deej.
Can I just put my two cents as to why I don't like that line?
Yeah.
It's because surely a menu's a very modern, even Western.
Is it though? But you say if you went into an old Prancing Pony tavern, they wouldn't go like bread or cheese or bread and cheese. That's a menu essentially, is it not?
Do orcs sit down and
do you want maggoty bread or would you want hobbit?
I don't dispute that there are not menus in Middle Earth. There probably are. Yes, I imagine the Prancing Pony would have a chalkboard up with that kind of thing. I don't think there's any restaurants in Mordor.
And well, I don't have to have a restaurant.
And
here.
I certainly don't think there are any waiters.
A menu doesn't have to come with a waiter. Look at Nando's.
Or Fred Syriac.
Well, hang on. If I'm ordering off of a menu in Mordor and I'm an orc, I'm like, where the fuck's the waiter?
Yeah, but I'm thinking menu of like slop of shit there, duck fucking thing. Like,
when so there's a specials board.
And also, do you think...
Not a specials board, but like the actual product there. That's essentially a menu, isn't it? It's choice.
Do you think orcs tip?
I think that maybe he's being like sarcastic. Like, nah. Imagine we used menus, boys.
There's also
good old orc sarcasm.
Yeah. But also, there's a line just a little bit afterwards, just like straight away afterwards, where like they actually he gives an air that he has some culinary prowess when he says, "I'm gonna put a little maggot hole in your belly."
Because
I feel like that's something he's done to like soften up some meat.
It's like an olive with stuffed stuff inside it. Or hobbit belly with maggot.
Hobbit.
Also, what's he gonna do? And he goes, "What about the legs? They're from Wooling." Here, Greg. Like, he likes fresh legs.
I don't need those. Right, they do.
Anyway, back to the segment.
Anyway, right, okay. So, I'm going to hand over to Deej, who is very excited. Dijon, go for it, mate.
So, yes, this part of the pod is where we're going to kind of sample Middle-earth's culinary delights. So, speaking there about the idea of a menu, we'll be kind of constructing our own menu. Of everything that is kind of consumed within the world of Lord of the Rings. And with that, what I'll do is I'll dive a little bit into the books, all parts of the films, for you guys to kind of guess where this particular food item sits throughout all of the sort of lore.
Okay.
So to introduce this particular delight, I'll read this segment from one of the books.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
A jug of coffee had just been set in the hearth. The seed cakes were gone, and the dwarves were starting a round of buttered scones when there was a knock at the door.
Ooh.
I think I just know where that is.
I'm going... We're going Hobbit, aren't we, here? We're going...
Listen, Deej, we think we've got you here, mate.
Yeah.
By the way, this is you versus us, this segment, as well, all
right? Right, okay.
If you can fox us completely, and we just...
Well, we might be wrong, actually, so we better get right. So we're saying it's when the dwarves invade Bilbo's house.
Yeah, we're saying it's Hobbit, we're saying the dwarves have
the first
having a right old knees up.
They've all started to arrive because they've all got the invitation. And Bilbo's having a freak out, like, what are all these dwarves doing? And they're all raiding his pantry and all sorts.
Are we going there?
Yep, that's where we're going. That's exactly where we're going. I'll put my headphones down quickly and just bring it to the table.
Yes. Oh, lovely.
Now we get to actually try them. Great, I can't wait for this, Deej. I'm so excited, mate.
Oh,
he's got them under a hand towel. Interesting.
What, ready for a reveal?
Maybe we should get a Lord of the Rings theme hand towel.
I tell you what, mate, Bilbo would be
delicious.
Wow,
looks delicious. Absolutely beautiful.
So, yes, there we have some of the Shire's best buttered scones. Now, interestingly, researching this, the hobbits in particular would eat these scones. There's always that sort of argument, is it cream first? Is it jam first? Is it a scone or is it a scone? I'm going to say it's a scone for today.
Scone.
And actually, to sort of divide the argument between cream or jam, they actually add another element here, and that element is butter. Yes, they butter one side of the scone, so it's butter first, then jam, then cream. So, gentlemen, if you'd like to...
Yeah,
just
like a sandwich, like dairy, middle and...
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely. It makes perfect sense to me. So if you'd like to grab yourselves a scone, if they're baked to perfection, you should just be able to twist where that sort of crease in the scone...
I'm going to go for this one.
Which one's calling out to you there, Mike?
You should be able to twist and then it should break.
It's great.
Like a fucking really moist, lovely
Really moist.
No, I like it moist.
I feel a bit sick.
Right, okay. Now we're done with looks like meat's back on the menu, boys.
Very good. I love that segment.
Oh, I love that segment.
Very good.
It was superb.
Yeah, I need a drink.
Yeah, little sip of ale. Mm-hmm. Ale and scone, does that go? Mm.
Yeah. Yep.
Does now. So we're going to talk about Khazad Dûm, otherwise known as Moria, and... Durin, specifically Durin the Fourth. And yeah, just, you know, it's like creative writing, boys. Just let your minds wander. Just what do you
think? I'm not going to lie, I know little to nothing about Durin the Fourth.
Durin the Fourth, okay.
Well, I think the fear is that they're going to, I think I was sort of saying this earlier, but they're going to almost make the Durin thing as part of an ancestral line. And that would be, I think, that would really set the nerds off to, like, what have you done to dwarf lineage?
What, they're going to play around with it?
Well, they're going to say, rather than, like, you know, with the story with Durin is, it's like, you are Durin. We can see he has been...
Yeah,
you know,
he's Durin folk.
Yeah, but what they're saying is maybe they might have Durin the Fourth and then, oh, it's Durin the Fifth. He's come along, and it's just his son.
Okay.
There's a lot of stuff on the internet about fears around them doing that.
Yeah.
I think, and that's due to a few different castings, and that it wasn't Durin the Fourth that was given one of the Rings of Power.
Mm-hmm.
So why? And it's just sort of like, why are you going to do this? It seems like a really unnecessary mistake that they might make.
But I think as dwarves go, Durin is a name people know. Even
he's a name
mate, he's a big player,
he's a face.
You've got to have a jury,
so I think
there,
it's like there's some name recognition there with the people that don't really know.
So I don't think we need a Deej fact check here, but Ash has got a load of names in front of him. I know that Durin the Fourth is a prince of Khazad Dûm, and he has a wife who we also see in the teaser trailer whose name I don't know.
Her name is Deesa.
And is she is a new made up character, or she's an actual character? Lore.
I don't know.
I
don't know this.
She's.
I was led to believe she was made up. But
yeah, yeah.
Well, maybe she isn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, she was... he made her.
He made her up.
Durin made her
He's
up.
He's making his girlfriend up.
Yeah, she's an imaginary girlfriend.
Better on holiday.
Summer camp.
Yeah, I've got a girlfriend. She lives in Canada. Okay, so Durin the Fourth and Princess Deesa. Interesting little segue. We should talk about this. Like, there's a bit of reaction out there in terms of, is the show too woke? Like, oh... we've seen a Latino elf. Is he Latino? I don't know. Hispanic.
Yeah.
There's a black dwarf princess.
Mm.
Are they pandering to just the woke generation, or I don't know?
It's so stupid when people say stuff like that. They weren't written as white.
Well, there wasn't.
I mean, just.
They are pandering to the woke generation, but I don't care.
Yeah,
is the long and short of it. I think
if you are an individual who is fucking outraged that there's a black dwarf princess in a made up fantasy show, then like what is wrong?
I agree, you
need some serious help.
There's a bigger thing. If the story's good, then the story's good. It doesn't matter what anyone looks like.
Imagine being a massive nerd and racist. biggest loser of all time.
You've got no chance of you.
Yeah.
So, Khazad Dûm, I think, like, in terms of, like, the visual that we're going to see with Khazad Dûm, I think it's going to be amazing.
Oh, I do, yeah.
We know that it's, like, a 14 level, like, 35 chambers per level...
That's where the dwarves hail from, right? And he's the first. Big hub.
Khazad Dûm is, you know, where Gandalf fights the Balrog when he says, "You shall not pass,"
breaks
the bridge.
That's Khazad Dûm.
It used to be like the pristine.
Drop down into oblivion when they fall.
But they built that. So they basically become a massive.
Bottom of the mountain.
Well, they discovered Mithril there. That's what Pyrrhodo's vest is made of. And that's like the most valuable metal.
Khazad Dûm, was like the, I don't know, like just the most amazing dwarven palace ever. Obviously, Balrogs were discovered there, a Balrog, and then it becomes Moria, which is Elvish for black hole.
Mm.
Black hole? Black pit? And that's by the time we get to Lord of the Rings, Fellowship, they go into what is just referred to as Moria. But when it was Khazad Dûm, it's like an amazing place. And I think, the visuals are going to be pretty amazing.
I can't wait to see that.
Yeah. but like, I don't know, I think that's where there's going to be like a lot of political stuff. I think there's a big bit in the teaser trailer where they figured out that Elrond and during the fourth are having like a rock breaking competition.
Yeah, well, I think
he's going to say a rock concert.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? I think that's going to be a thing during Elrond's relationship.
I think a big bit of Elrond's storyline is going to be re-establishing the relationship with the dwarves and the elves.
Is that going to be sort of reminiscent of Legolas and Gimli? Do we see that similar sort of dwarves and elves?
I presume so. I think that's probably what they're going
to
go.
I guarantee that throughout this, to give people a familiarity, like they'll get Gimli's ancestors in it, and they'll be like, "Oh yeah, that's him." Like they will do that. Yeah. Like it's too late for it to be too early for it to be a battle.
Well, they're going to that thing with the Hobbit where they kind of shoehorned in horrible references, like, "Oh, that's my wee boy." Well, we saw like that Legolas bit, like, "Oh, shut your mouth, stop that. We don't need it. And then like, "Oh, there's a there's a ranger you must go and find." They call him
rubbish.
That's so horrible.
Yeah, they don't need to do that. But
that's nostalgia porn, right?
It is nostalgia porn. At its worst as well. It's not even done tastefully.
So look, what I've done is I've looked at the... I don't know if anyone else has just scrolled through the comments on the YouTube trailer. Basically outrage, like from most people.
Mm.
There's basically outrage from most people, and it's based in... Well, let me just read a few of them. I almost want to do it in like an arsehole's voice.
Well,
this could be a trailer of any fantasy saga world. It lacks, for a better word, a true Tolkien identity. The very thing that separates the grand work of Tolkien from other works of fantasy literature. If I watched this without knowing what it is and somebody told me that it's a teaser for the next season of The Witcher, I would not question it. It has elves and mythical creatures, some generic fantasy scenes and scenarios. My reaction would be, cool, looks pretty good. Nothing screams Tolkien to me. So for me, a lifelong Tolkien fan, I will say no thanks. I will not even give it a try.
Well, that
from is... Sneaker, and by the way, the E in Sneaker is a 3.
Yeah. Well, Sneaker.
Were you going to say it's a sneaker?
That's ridiculous.
Well, when you watched it, did it scream Tolkien?
Well, first of all, what is a Tolkien stamp? You tell me what a trailer would be of a Tolkien stamp.
I think it'd be more slow paced, more kind of whimsical,
contrasty.
They kind of want it like that kind of filter over it, where it looks like oldie woldie and nice. Yeah, no, I think it's. I just think to give it a go. I think that's what you have to say.
That's the bit I don't understand. Like, I won't even.
Yeah, give it a go because that is a teaser.
Sneaker's lying anyway.
Sneaker is a liar. Dirty liar.
I think just a comment in regards to what he says about The Witcher there, like, I think he's making direct parallel between Galadriel and Ciri, isn't he?
Mm.
And he's basically trying to say that they're probably going to be the same character.
Well, actually, it probably is a man, but
it's hard though, because everything like The Witcher or anything has Lord of the Rings basically to thank.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So you're almost flipping it backwards on itself and saying like,
Of course, it looks like everything else. Because
next
it's...
one, the Peter Jackson movies are not perfect adaptations. There was room for improvement.
Perfect.
But the fact that stop it there. But the fact is that they did respect the basics of the story, its themes, and most of its characters. They did respect Middle-earth and its history. They did cut some important scenes, and they did make some unnecessary changes, yes. But all in all, you could recognise The Lord of the Rings. This thing, however, can't be qualified as an adaptation, considering that in 1 minute of footage, they show nothing from the stuff one would expect from the Second Age, nothing but a single shot of Numenor. Why are they compressing the timeline? Why does Galadriel look like Joan of Arc? Who the hell is that hobbit girl straight out of Peter Pan? If you read the leaks, which I've not, by the way, or even the interviews with the writers, things become much worse. It's obvious they just don't care. They bought a logo and that's it. Oh, and by the way, the aesthetic looks awful. The costumes look awful and the hairstyles look awful. Money is no substitute for talent.
I don't know. I think the one thing that we have got on our side is, isn't Bezos like a complete
he's a massive,
nerd
yeah,
and he's a he huge is, fan yeah. and he's gone
he's definitely
make
nerd.
This thing
yeah.
I like rockets and I like parcels and I like Lord of the Rings, you know. I think it's kind of in safe hands.
parcels.
Not even books.
But I think like there is a bit of that where he probably would have said like, don't completely change it, like keep the story. But as we keep saying,
I think it's it's
you have to compress the storyline.
It's but this is a teaser trailer. Like they're showing you 1 second of one place. You're acting like you know everything.
Did he say why is there one shot of?
There's not Numenor. One shot of Numenor. There's not one shot.
He says there's only one shot.
Oh, there's only one. Yeah. What are you gonna do?
I think
it's 1 minute.
What works in Amazon's favour here is they've released a lot of stuff where they've worked quite closely with the people that made it. So The Boys, for instance. I thought was brilliant, and you know, with that, it did, you know, have a lot of the through line of what the original comic did. A lot of the cartoons they've just brought out as well is made by the guys that did it.
You're talking about Amazon.
Yeah, Amazon. Yeah,
I am happy that Amazon got it as opposed to like Netflix or someone else who apparently were all in the auction, like that original auction to buy the rights. Oh, I'm sure they would. Right, the last one was from Enrique Duenas.
Nice name.
Enrique Duenas, by the way.
Jealous of that,
yeah, right. Last comment I pulled out.
Probably means...
They've disregarded the law. That's the issue. Amazon only have the rights to the Second Age, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, but don't have the rights to the material written in the Second Age, aside from the appendices. So they're effectively having to make a fanfic. It's within around 3,000 years before the events in The Hobbit. However, they have admitted that they are compressing the timeline, etc., which, again, will cause just so many deviations from the law. If they said, we're making a show loosely based on Middle-earth and some of the characters will resemble some of the characters from Middle-earth, then probably no one would mind. The issue is that they're calling this an adaptation when it's not an adaptation at all. It would be amazing if Sauron could make an appearance, which I agree with, but they're in a slightly tight spot as they can't adapt anything that resembles material from the Silmarillion. They've not bought those rights. Histories or unfinished tales, which is where much of the Second Age material and battles with Sauron, etc. takes place. It'll be interesting to see how they work around it. That comment, I thought, had some...
So it's more levelled, isn't it?
Yeah.
If Sauron isn't in it, then they should not be making it.
They shouldn't be making it. They won't. He's definitely in it.
But that is a concern, isn't it? The fact that they've only got a limited number or a limited amount of material that they've actually owned the rights to.
I'm sorry. There is a chance that they might not own the rights to to feature Sauron?
No. Yeah.
So
no.
Why?
Well, Sauron went by another name.
We've named this podcast pretty fucking useless.
you can't tell the story of the making of the rings without
Sauron. Mentioning no. Sauron.
Well, that's what he's saying. He's like, they're in a tight spot. How are they going to navigate
Sauron?
But that's that's something that for me that you go like, okay, there's a new Lord of the Rings show coming out. What are you excited about? One of the first things for me would be like, oh, sick.
The Rings of Power, Sauron.
It's second age, is it? Right, we might actually see Sauron as a guy, not just a fiery eye.
Anatar.
Yeah. First Cal prediction here. Feel free to cut me down. It's not a prediction. I'm just saying like, oh, maybe. Fiery meteor man that lands. Could be Sauron.
That's my fear is.
I think
But he does get...
Starts off all nice.
Sorry, Mike, why is that a fear?
Well, I just don't think that's how...
I don't think that's how he should be introduced to the... So look,
well, we can leave that for next episode.
Yeah, I think to wrap it up, and I'd like both your opinions, I think when I was scrolling through those YouTube comments, it was really hard to find a positive comment. Mm. If you've not been on there, what's mental is that, literally every other comment is people spamming the comment section with that Tolkien quote, which is... evil is not capable of creating anything new. It can only distort and destroy what has been invented or made by the forces of good.
That's fucking good though. That
it's a great.
I might go start spamming some.
It's a great quote, but it's people saying that that's what this series is going to do.
Okay.
What I'm going to say to you guys is like, should we be positive? Like, just should we be positive, and why should we be positive?
We should be positive because, first of all, if you're a Lord of the Rings fan, it's just definitely nice to experience it. And also, it's okay to be excited about something and then get let down. Like, I'll put it out there. I hate the Hobbit movies.
Yeah.
I hate them. I really hate them. Mm. Like, there's some bits in it I'm sort of like, I like, but the movies, I just
but
like, really
I
don't
do
enjoy
as well.
Them.
I hate
but
them. But I like being in Middle-earth. I like being in Middle-earth.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I kind of like being there. Playing the Shadow of Mordor games, like they're stupid.
Yeah,
like they've got like they're stupid. Like they rip the lore to pieces. But it's great just to be involved. So yeah, be excited as well.
Yeah, I agree, 100%.
Until it's rubbish, and then we'll make a much longer podcast.
Yeah, then I'll cast a bit more funny of it. Shit.
Yeah. I think like probably it's. The Tolkien universe and the Tolkien fans are the like notoriously the most hard to please, and are the most like defensive of just anything that even strays like one hair's length away from what was the actual lore.
You ever come across a Mick Cutnell fan?
Yeah, Simply Red fans and JRR tokens, tokenites. So yeah, like they've almost got an impossible task. But I think if you just kind of go. I just, like you said, like just love being in Middle Earth again and just like, but even the fact that we've got this to look forward to, be positive and be excited about it. So,
The worst that can happen is I don't watch it.
Yeah. We'll certainly be doing that and each podcast which we're going to do. We're going to do one a month, Jim, we think.
So the plan is, this is annoying for people watching because you can't see me, but the plan is to do one a month up until the release of the series where we'll try and do a companion piece one a week as of when the episodes come out.
Okay.
But I mean we're free and easy and we might even do more than one a month, we might do less, who knows.
Okay, fine. But roughly speaking we're calling this the March episode.
Well, no, we'll call this the April episode. This will be ready to come out in April.
April, so we'll do an April, May, June, July, August, Jesus Christ. And then we'll be into September and that's when it's and then it will become the companion podcast to the episodes.
Exactly.
Cool. Lovely.
Amazing.
Right. Well, lovely boys.
Sounds like a plan.
If you just to add this in there as an audio bit, it will be coming across the screen now. But if you want to email us with any queries, questions, or you want to tell us to fuck off, it's
themouthofsauron.pod@gmail.com. So that is themouthofsauron.pod@gmail.com.
Lovely stuff.
All right, let's wrap it there.
Right.
Brilliant. Lovely talking to you fellas.
Whoa, not so fast. We've got some socials for you. Instagram at themouthofsauronpodcast. Twitter, themospodcast. That's the MOS podcast. Facebook, themouthofsauronpodcast. And email, mouthofsauron.pod@gmail.com. Okay, back to the absolutely fucking brilliantly produced theme tune.
Shall we?
Yeah, cheers.
There's wonders in this world. Be Mouth is the mouth of Sauron. Come get your rings of power.